starting a few minutes late. I'm Dr. Leslie Hadfield, and I'm moderating this panel today. And I teach African history here at BYU. So I had class this morning, and I was just coming from taking care of a few things after class. So I apologize for coming late. But we can go ahead and get started, and I won't take too much time to introduce the panelists because I know you can find information about them in the program, most of them. And then I want to make sure they have enough time. I just want to remind everyone that we have translators who are translating for those who may need that. So if you need the headsets, then it looks like some of you have them. That's fine. Also, when the presenters are presenting and when we are doing our discussion, we need to keep that in mind. Maybe it's more so for me, so I don't talk too quickly, but so that the translators can keep up with that. Each delegate will have 12 minutes. We'll start with 12 minutes, and I will let them know when their time is going, how much time they have. And we have a number of lawyers who are dealing with human rights. We have two delegates from the Democratic Republic of the Congo and also one from Nigeria. And so each of them are very well qualified. We're very grateful to have them all here. I know they've come a long way, and we appreciate that very much. And we appreciate all of you coming to attend this session. I'll just briefly introduce our speakers in the order that they will be speaking. First, we'll have Professor Maziambo, who is from the DRC, and he is at the University of Kinshasa, where he also received his or earned his law degree, and he also studied in Spain. So we have all of our delegates are obviously well qualified and have a lot to share with us. So he's been a professor of international law and again working on human rights issues with numerous publications. Then we will hear from Professor Yav, who's also from the DRC, and he is at the University of Lubumbashi, where he also is a legal practitioner, and he's also the founder and managing partner of a law firm known as Yav & Associates. So he has done a lot there and has served as well with the UNESCO Chair for Human Rights, Good Governance, Peace, and Conflict Resolution. So again, another example of the expertise that we have in the room. And then we will hear from our Nigerian representative, Mr. Falana, and he is a practicing attorney in Nigeria, and all of them will give us more about their studies and expertise. So I will first turn the time over to Professor Maziambo.
Hello, everyone. I will speak in French because it's the language I know the best. My English is not too good. I will talk to you about right in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It will be completed by my colleague, Joseph Yav. The RDC, as we abbreviate it, is a territory in Central Africa, neighboring nine other countries. It's a very, very large country, the second after Algeria in Africa. Its population is about 70 million. This population is divided into a multitude of religions and creeds, some from African origin and other called imported religions. Before independence, the colonial presence, Belgium, applied a policy of discrimination which favored religions that helped colonization. And some religions, such as Protestant religion, had some disadvantage. And the African religions were not allowed and had lots of persecution. So independence helped equality among the religions. After 50 years of independence, the question is, what's the religious repartition distribution among the population? And the second question would be, what would be the meaning and the range, the reach of that freedom? And what's the relationship between the state and religion? And I'm going to try to answer the three questions in two parts. The first part is the variety of all these religions among the population. And the second, the organization of the worship. In RDC, there is an impressive variety of religious associations, but we're not going to make a list of all these creeds, but show the tendencies among these groups in the population. These tendencies can be grouped into two, the traditional religions and then the ones called imported. The traditional religions are several qualified as animism. These religions are in a strong decline because of the religions that are imported, but we think there's about 4% of people practicing this religion. And among those religions that are imported, the greatest is the Catholicism, 50%. After Catholicism come Protestant churches. They're very diversified. Some are federated as the Church of Christ in Congo. It's an association of various churches. And it is estimated that about 30% of the population has joined those churches. But there's are also other Protestant churches that do not want to belong to this federation, and they represent about 5% of the population. Since the 80s, there was a big proliferation of new religions that are different from Catholicism and Protestantism. In those groups, so we see the group of spiritual awakening or the Last Days churches, the Jehovah Witnesses, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I won't end this part without talking about a church that exists, is the church, Kimbangist Church, whose founder is from Congo, who was arrested and judged and condemned and died in prison, and it's widely spread, and about 6% of the population joined that church. So that's for Christian religions. We also have Islam. That's mainly in the east of the country, which was an Arab territory during the slave period. And there's about 3% of yeah. besides these two trends, there's other creeds with small influence, like Hinduism, Baha'i faith, the Church of Scientology, and Buddhism. And these groups represent 0.4% of the population. These numbers are not very precise. They're just indicative. And there's also a movement from one church to another. So the numbers are not are just indicative. So what's the law applicable to these beliefs and religions? So there's two questions, the reach of these religions and the proclamations and their organization, terms of worship. The right is proclaimed at national and international level. There's on the international level, the International Pact regarding Civil and Political Rights and the African Charts for Human Rights and People. The best instrument that defines the right is the pact in 1966, Article 18. It's pretty long, and I will not read it. But internally, we have a constitutional article of 2006, Article 22 and Article 46 of the law regarding the association without non-lucrative associations. Everyone has a right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion, to observe its religion and convictions individually or in groups, in public or in private, and observe practice, teaching, practice, accomplishments of rights, but must observe the rights of others. And so you can read more of it in Article 46 of the Constitution and the law. But besides this, there's an added guarantee by the affirmation in the first article of the secular nature of the state. And this article states that the republic is in its boundaries a secular state, a democratic, unitary, social, and secular. So you will see that in all these instruments, the freedom of religion is proclaimed in conjunctly with freedom of thought and conscience. And I'm not going to try to explain the differences between these liberties and freedoms and it aims at protecting any belief, whether they be believing in God or atheist or agnostic. And the freedom to have a religion and to observe it. And to also change your religion or to become atheist. This freedom can be performed individually or collectively, in public, in private. This liberty and freedom is an exterior manifestation, public, of the religious feelings. The cult and performance of rites beyond that can include meetings and building places of worship, the use of formulas and ritual objects or exhibition of symbols and observation of religious celebrations. In the penal code of Article 79 gives these rights and protects people against violences, offenses, and threats. This article that I talked to you about, it shows the secular aspect of the state. But the principle of separation between the state and religion was also inserted in the previous constitutions in 64 and 67, which had articles that said that there's no state religion in RDC. But these constitutions didn't state that the state was secular. It appeared only later in the amendment of 1974. This solemn affirmation of secularism of the state was aiming at putting an end to a dispute between the Catholic Church and Protestant Church. The church, Protestant churches defended this affirmation statement because they thought that the RDC would continue the Belgian colonial policies, religious policies. Oh, I thought I was over time. In RDC,
en République démocratique in RDC, the religious and the religions are organized as non-profit associations. So, to apply for the granting of that legal status, the denominational associations must be called religious confessions. And for that, they need to meet some conditions that the founder and the legal representative must comply to. We used to separate the two, but we make a differentiation between the two, because now we say that the founder must be mentally sane. So the founder must also be a theologist, and there must be also a legal representative who must also be mentally sane. And that is how a religion can be constituted as an association. We will now talk about the limitations to the freedom of religion, the respect of individuals and health. But what's important is that to know that they must have places and buildings that do not disturb public well-being. So there should not be noise at night, and there should be also sane buildings, and there should not be any disturbance of any kind. There is an, and now in the past we used to had churches with prophets and would reveal sorcerers, and then often they were little children who would then be cast out of their families. So now it is forbidden to have churches that would declare some children to be sorcerers. So in the Republic of Congo, The plurality of churches have been consecrated, and my friend will talk about it. But as it is, we still have churches that do not have legal status. But there is peace between the state and the churches. The state is laic. And also relative peace between churches. Thank you.
Thank you. this a cultural session of Bakongo, but it's also a religious movement. But now that religious movement was trying to create a separate, not state, yes, but also a separate province based only on the belief, but also the population, the people who are from their churches and origins. There are several clashes, and this church or association was even being banned by the state because the clashes several times. Thanks. The guy is still in the parliament, so he can still speak on behalf of his people. In the DRC, like you said, I'm rushing. The constitution provides, like as Professor Andre said, that there's Article 1 and Article 22. But there is also the law of 2001 that deals with the non-profit organization or association. And any churches that want to create, to be established in Congo should follow that line, should be in line with that law. As source of law, there is also the case law. Even if it's poor, but we can find some decision that's dealing with the religion matters. And the famous case is the Jehovah's Witness versus the Republic of Zaire in Congo, but you can even find that on the African human system, especially at the African Commission of Human and Human and People's Rights. But like Professor Andre said, despite the constitution and the internal laws and also the jurisprudences, the international law also is a source. We can find some sources of freedom of religion in the DRC. Let me give you an example of what I call secularism in action, or an example. And the simple example is marriage. Before 1997, I'm referring to 1997 because that is the when we changed the family code, the family law. But before that, religious marriage were lawful, was organized by the law and recognized. But after 1997, religious marriage is no longer recognized by the law. So thanks. You should organize with two types of marriage. Either in family, we call it mariage celebration marriage in family, though the families and the people who are there, but with obligation to declare that marriage to the civil authority within 30 days or later on. Secondly, the marriage that's organized by the civil authority, obviously the civil, that can, but there is no religious. Yes, you can celebrate religiously your marriage after you've done the official, the civil marriage. Why that? Because it was affirmed that we need clearly to separate the state and the religion. Professor Andre referred that there was a conflict long time ago between the Roman Catholic Church and the Protestants, but also sometimes politicians also play games in terms of favoritism. They choose the religion, they choose not the religion, the churches that is more clean and better to them. But despite that, some churches continue to celebrate only religious marriage. That is not good, especially for the wives. Not good. Oh, what am I? Yeah. This is a recent photo, I think just 2 weeks ago. And you see the Pope, plus our bishops and so on. Those guys are part of what you call Senko. Senko rejects, even if it changed. even if it changed. And the church has come clearly saying that, no, you will not change the constitution. And now, when I was coming here, on all the TVs and so on, the newspapers, is we are a secular state. That is the argument of the state. We're a secular state. But my question, within a secular state, is the churches have the right to contribute or to discuss, to debate issues, or because they are religious, they should not have the right to discuss, to debate, and so on and so on. And at that occasion, they were in Rome, at Vatican precisely, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks, and giving a memorandum, submitting a memorandum to the Pope on that matter. And it was a big debate even now. Just when we are coming, there is a youth movement in a Catholic church. The youth, the dissent, they say, no, we are not concerned by the politics of our leaders. So you can even clearly see that there is interference in DRC, in the politics. But even within this religious interference, we find that not all the churches, not all the thanks. I'm concluding. You find that the Roman Catholic Church is taking part, a big part, despite the tensions that the one who are ruling our electoral commissions, and so and so on. So they are doing politics without saying that it's politics. We see that they are doing good, and the attention and privilege. Why I'm talking about privilege, you find that even we, among the big five churches in Congo, you find that there is also division, or some are privileged, that the Roman Catholics, comparing to others, getting gifts and so on and so on. The future of secularism in the DRC, 07. It's clear that our constitution says that we are a secure state. Freedom of expression, of religion is expressed. But you can read at other provision in the constitution that say the president, the elected president should yes, when the oath, depending on the gods and so on and so on. I think those, all the references to God in the constitution, but also in several and public meetings discussed by the officials, creates problems in terms of a secular state. So that's why we say, we declare that we are a secular state, but do we have a culture of secularity, not of secularism? I've learned that. Thanks.
Yes, just to give the Nigerian dimension to the wonderful presentation made by my colleagues from the DRC. And I want to look at the topic, that's religion and secularism in Nigeria, pass from another perspective. And I begin by saying that in 1986, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank compelled the Nigerian state to embrace the Structural Adjustment Program. This was a program meant to destroy the economy of African countries and make them, turn them, as it were, the economy, into basically our countries became mere suppliers of raw materials. This
this has been going on since the colonial regime, but it got to a state where Western financial institutions felt they needed to really destroy the economy of the continent. And so about 53 countries in Africa embraced the structural adjustment program. And what that meant was that the middle class was destroyed. You were either very rich or extremely poor. So poverty became the order of the day. And because of such harsh economic conditions faced by the people, the continent witnessed grinding poverty. A country like Nigeria that is supposed to be very rich became a poor country. And out of the frustrations brought about by the economy, people found solace in religion. And that was when a lot of prosperity gospelers, preachers were preaching the gospel of prosperity, saying, my God is not a God of poverty. It's a God of prosperity. The oil emerged, giving people false hope that you can suffer here. Your engagement will be in life thereafter. A radical Nigerian musician at that time, Fela Nicola Pokuti, captured the mood of the nation in his record, Shuffling and Smiling, where he sang that, suffer, suffer for what? You enjoy for heaven, you know? That Muslim and Christian sing this every day. In a bid to divert the attention of the people from the crisis of underdevelopment, the government encouraged this embrace of religion by the people, while politicians took advantage of religion by manipulating the people, you know, so as to gain political power. And for political exigency, the state does not, as a matter of policy up to now, punish or prosecute religious leaders when they violate the law. And that also goes for young people who engage in sectarian, violent sectarian conflicts all over the country. Churches are burned from time to time. And the government simply turned the other eye. The crisis we're witnessing now, the Boko Haram menace, also emerged from this kind of irresponsibility of the government, or the negligence of the government to enforce the rule of law in the country. Now, human rights and religion in Nigeria, well, just like the Congo, our constitution has beautiful provisions for fundamental right to religion, conscience, but at the end of the day, the relevant provisions of the constitution are not respected, just like in most African countries, in most countries of the world. It's difficult to find a country that is really secular. Most speeches of the American president end with God bless America. Even the Supreme Court of America begins the legal year with, invoking the name of God. So in most countries too, but it's worse in a country like Nigeria where the government pretends to worship God, and in the process, there's a lot of relationship between the government right now with the Christian Association of Nigeria, where the president, who is a pastor of God, had this private jet. By the way, in Nigeria, that is the way to measure your success. As a pastor, you need to have a private jet. I'm not sure you're at that level yet in the Congo, you know. But that is the position in Africa. But I'm also submitting that with respect to human rights, there's also the need for us, particularly as Africans, to refrain and restrain ourselves from adopting the Western model because of the welfare system that is functioning in the West. Because you have the social security system, you can think beautifully about political and civil rights. But for African countries, and Nigeria in particular, where almost less than 70, more than 70% of the population live on less than $2 a day, you cannot but talk about socioeconomic rights. And so, you that goes for Congo. If we do proper census, I'm not sure you can say Christianity or Islam has the greatest number of people, because many of those who are Christian, profess Christian and Muslim, also, you know, patronize traditional religion. So it is very difficult to draw in a line of dichotomy between genuine Christian Muslims and traditional worshippers. Now, in order to ensure that the right to religion is respected in Nigeria, quite a number of cases have been taken to court, particularly those cases that have to do with the oppression of women in the name of religion. I've referred to a number of cases here. One of them had to do with a woman whose husband had professed to be a Christian while he was alive. But as soon as he died, the community said, and the man had indicated his wish to be buried according to his Christian rites. But when he died, the community, his village people said, no, you are going to be buried in line with our traditional religion. Of course, the lady insisted, the widow insisted that, and buried her husband in a Christian way. Of course, she was excommunicated together with her son. You know, she went to court, and the court set aside the excommunication and indeed awarded damages in her favor. There was also another one where a lady was ejected from her family house, her apartment, the apartment she had lived with her husband while the husband was alive. That under traditional religion in the eastern part of the country, if a woman had no child, once the husband dies, you have to be ejected from the house. Again, she went to court, and the court said, no, there is no way you can eject her from her house under the constitution, since she had the right to religion. The other two cases that are interesting, in which the courts in Nigeria have given conflicting judgments, is about, again, Jehovah Witness, who went to court. A boy was sick, and the mother refused to give her consent for blood transfusion. Of course, the hospital management felt worried that the boy could die. So they rushed to the police, and the police went to a magistrate court to get a court order, which compelled the doctors to transfer blood to the boy without the consent of the mother. Of course, the mother left, and the boy later went to court, and the court said it was irresponsible on the part of the mother not to have given her consent in the circumstance. But a contrast to that is another judgment of the Supreme Court, where a doctor was actually charged with professional misconduct by the Medical and Dental Council for respecting the right of a patient, you know, not to have blood transfusion, and she died. You know. Of course, the Supreme Court said, since there was a right of, you know, to conscience and religion, it was wrong to have punished the doctor. And once a person says, I'm not going to allow blood transfusion on religious ground, that right should be respected, unless if it had to do with the rights of other people or the welfare of the society. These are some of the few cases that have gone to court. The other one that is interesting, which the court will give judgment next week in Lagos, is the wearing of headscarves, hijab, by female Muslim students. You know, these have been banned in Lagos, but the Muslim Student Society had gone to court, and the arguments have been concluded. The court is going to give judgment next week. Let me just summarize by saying that the failure of the Nigerian state to respect the secular status of the country has led to crisis, including the Boko Haram phenomenon. You had a situation in 2004 where a governor in one of the states in the north proclaimed the Sharia, contrary to the provision of the Constitution, Section 10, that says no state, the federal government or state government in Nigeria, shall not proclaim any religion as official religion. When that was not checked by the government, not challenged by the federal government, the Obasanjo administration, other states, about 17 other states in the north, declared the Sharia. And it will be interesting to know that as soon as the election was over in 2007, all the state government that have proclaimed Sharia administration is very friendly with some of the sponsors of the Boko Haram sect, particularly the governor in the north, a former governor that actually funded the Boko Haram sect, one Modu Ali Sharif, who has been exposed repeatedly, but yet the government has not been able to do anything to him. As a matter of fact, very recently, the president traveled to him, with him to Chad, to discuss terrorism in Nigeria. And so this is the kind of problem we have all over the place. Just like my colleagues from the DRC have said, yes, under the Constitution, there is right to freedom of religion. Under the Constitution, the state is supposed to be a secular one. But in practice, the government does not respect the secular status of the country, and that has led to crisis. For the majority of our people who are poor and ignorant, I think the warning of Karl Marx has, been realized in Africa, i.e. that religion has become the opium of the people. And the only way to challenge that is to address the economic conditions of the African people. Thank you very much.
Once again, I would like to thank all of our delegates for coming. It was a dynamic panel, and it reminded me of the various aspects of religion in Africa, which we find as historians very interesting, because you have so many different traditions and religions coming together. And we saw in this different questions of how do you balance the secularism with respect for different religious beliefs, and how then does that also play? Maybe the religious sects can also have a good impact or a bad impact on politics. So very interesting things. Also aspects of how does generation fit in, the youth, how do they fit in to this as well. But I think we have enough time for one or two questions. Unfortunately, we don't have all the time that we could probably spend asking these questions. There's so many interesting things, and we're so grateful for them to come so far. But there will also be plenty of opportunities, I'm sure, for people to discuss outside of this room. But let's take one or two questions now. In fact, maybe we can take two questions and then let the panelists respond. And then we should have a microphone. If you will just remember to speak slowly into the microphone so the translators can help us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those discussions have been very illuminating. I have a question for the professors from DR Congo. Either of them could answer it. And that question has to do with, we know that there has been some disadvantage against the African traditional religion. But I want to know whether, as in Nigeria, there are actually laws, criminal laws, that make the practice of traditional religion an offense for which you can be charged to court and sentenced to 2 years imprisonment, as we have the experience in Nigeria, both under the Sharia law and under the Southern Criminal Code. So any of the professors can answer. I also want to associate myself with what Femi has said, Femi Falano, concerning this undercurrent of religion. We say, Africans generally say, oh, we are either Christian or we are Islamist or Muslims. But when it comes to the crunch, we really expose our inbred belief in the African ways of life. And I just tell you a short story, very short, of about a magistrate who is a Christian. When he got to court in the morning, he saw some fetish thing on his chair. And then he said he couldn't sit down. So he called the registrar. Can you pick that up and throw it in the dustbin? The registrar said, my lord, I cannot do so. Then he called the policeman attached to him. Can you please pick this thing up and throw it away? The man said, no, I cannot touch it. Then the policeman said, my lord, we call the judges my lord. My lord,
somewhat related question, and that is if we can agree that religion deserves a special protection in our societies, although it needs to be respected in the right way, at what point do cultural practices entitled to the same protections? Are they not? When does culture and religion, where's the dividing line? And, it seems to be an interesting question in Africa about, you know, these traditional religions, but they sometimes are not religions as are understood throughout the world. And so are they entitled to the same protections, and how do we determine that?
Thank you. Yes, it was one of the themes I thought of all the panelists is also, what do you do when religious rights or practices might clash with what we see as secular rights and practices? So, okay, we'll give some time for the panelists to respond. I don't know who wants to go first. You should have your microphone, so you can just speak.
Does DRC law, does it have sanctions against traditional religions? There is no law that sanctions the traditional religious practices per se. But as we said, many Congolese the fact is that the religions, imported religions, have not been there for a long time. They have been imposed by the colonial situations. People have believed because there were advantages linked to that. And so I will be Islamic because, but you know, for example, to study, you had to be a Catholic because Muslims did not have schools. I know a lot of people who could not study because their parents said, no, you cannot go there. It's a white school. You will have to let go of your Muslim beliefs. So sometimes they do it just, you know, for looks, which makes it so that later on, when other religions have truly preached the word of God and that people saw that we could really, believing in the gospel, be protected against bad influences. The churches that have taught this kind of things have lost a lot of believers because people discover that you can live a faith in different ways and that you don't have to be entirely separated from your traditional beliefs. So in our countries, many people are not reassured just or comforted just through Christian beliefs. It is not enough for a lot of them. Some people continue to go to a church thinking that to believe in Jesus Christ is enough. And that's why we have a lot of people going back and forth between churches. What concerning superstitious practices, there are practices, for example, you cannot sacrifice your child, you cannot torture, like mutilation or whipping. In that case, we do not apply traditional faith because we sanction whipping or mutilation because we consider that you can go into your traditional cults, which are not organized as churches, so we don't know who performs them. There's no temple. It happens in villages or in small houses. Anybody can go. That's why during the day people are at churches, and at night they're doing traditional cults. And we're not against it, but we're against manifestations of faith that touch the public. like whipping or mutilation, or to avoid or to prevent children from being vaccinated or attending schools, that is sanctioned. But to believe that there is a relationship between God and touching the ancestors is not forbidden. Maybe my colleague can complete the answer. Well, we're a little.
Of the Constitution. The last one which is very interesting. There are 36 states in America. All the states, apart from one, recognize only two religions, Christianity or Islam. But one governor has also added the third, which is traditional religion. So in every official program, a Muslim cleric, a Christian priest, and a traditional worshiper are asked to pray. It's also a subversion of secularism. Because I've advised the governor, just forget all the three religions and make it a private affair. He said no. I also want to make a point that these two religions are not the only religions that our people believe in. You know, so this is the problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We're